Well, I'm honored to be here, and I think throughout my talk you'll see obvious connections to work that Rhen has been associated with in the past. I'm going to talk about an experiment that was done at the Savannah River site starting in the 1980s, and a data set resulted that was older than normal in the sense that the plutonium was in the ground for more than a decade. And so what we did with this data set was try to figure out what was implied by the data. And this is what I'm calling computer-aided thinking, and I'll just try to emphasize that a little bit. Ingie Demmer-Candler did her PhD on this work and related to the modeling, and Shannon Thompson is working now on plant experiments. So here is an illustration of the experiments. There were small lysimeters, and a source of plutonium was put on filter paper placed near the center of the lysimeters. They were left in the ground for approximately 11 years. Then cores were taken down the center, and they were stored at low temperature for about another decade. And then the plutonium concentrations were measured as a function of position. So basically, we knew what the plutonium concentrations were down along the center of the cores. And here are some of the data. They're superimposed by the source location. And so you can see that there's quite a lot of reproducibility in the data. These would be three different lysimeters. And this is the below the source activity concentration. This is the above the source activity concentration. So the first thing we tried to do is explain that distribution based on water flow in the soil and transport of plutonium. And this is the way we set up the analysis. We had two classes of plutonium, what we called oxidized PU, which was a mixture of oxidation state 5 and oxidation state 6 of the PU. We didn't differentiate between those two species because they have similar transport properties. And then the other class was the reduced PU, which we call PUR, and that was class 3 and 4. The big difference between these two is that PUR is favored thermodynamically quite dramatically under natural conditions, and it's also... Sorry, whoops. What did I do wrong here? All you got to do is barely touch this thing. It doesn't, yeah.
Did you get it back where you wanted it?
Yeah. No, I guess I didn't. Went all the way to the end, didn't it? I'm going back. I'm going the wrong way.
You're going the wrong way.
What? I'm hitting this one. Okay, now we understand. Sorry about that.
Thanks.
All right. All right, so we used the variably saturated flow equation to simulate the water movement. Out of that came the water content and the seepage velocity. That went into the coupled reactive transport equations because it was important to distinguish between the reduced and the oxidized PU because the difference in the mobility was probably close to a factor of 1,000, something like that. So it was very important. And, you know, this is acting inconsistently. It's acting inconsistently. I'm going to start using this here. Okay, so this is, okay. So this gives you just a little more of an idea of what went into these equations. In the variably saturated flow equation, we had climatic conditions, soil properties, Van Gennuchten functions. We put the transpiration in as a sink term, and we used the Thornthwaite method to estimate the daily transpiration. And we had climatic data on which to base that. And then the reactive transport equations, we had advection and dispersion, the plutonium adsorption and desorption, and then, I didn't do anything that time, surface-mediated redox reactions. Okay, so, all right, when we ran those simulations, That's basically what we got when we considered the soil properties alone. And I've put more or less an average curve on there. You see, it's just switching.
I don't know
what's going wrong. I'll try to stand away from it. Wait a minute. Okay, that's where we were. Basically, we could simulate the below source of the plutonium concentration. The shape in that curve is determined by the oxidation and reduction. The reduced PU is this part, 99% or more, and this is pretty much due to transient oxidation of the reduced PU. But no matter what we did, we couldn't get it to go up. So that's when we started looking into the possibility of plants. And so we modified the model to include uptake by plant roots and transport in the xylem. And so this is the same as it was before, the two top things, that's the soil. And then the root water uptake simulated in the variably saturated flow equation went into the plant equation as a source, a part of the source term. And then the reactive transport equations reproduced the plutonium concentrations that went into the plant. And the main physical properties that we needed was we had to get the uptake, we had water uptake due to transpiration as a function of elevation, xylem cross-sectional area as a function of elevation, fluid velocity in the xylem as a function of elevation, porosity of xylem, magic. Starting to read my mind, actually. That's maybe I just should do nothing here. Okay, so when we put the plants in, we immediately could simulate this portion of the data. And all right, so simulation one is what you saw before. Simulation two is a case where the PU is very mobile in the plant, and it equilibrates in the plant tissue during each growing season. Why did we do that? Well, that's the only way with mobile stuff we could get enough PU into the plant to account for the stuff that we saw in the soil. And then number three is an extreme case where the transport of the plutonium in the plant is basically retarded the same as in the soil. And here, after 11 years, we don't even have the front up to the top of the surface. So here's the questions that came out by that. Is the PU very mobile or very immobile in plants? And two, does the PU accumulate on the soil surface due to annual dieback? Now, when we looked at the very mobile case, we realized a lot of plutonium would get up into the top of the plant. And when the plants died, which were mainly grasses, they would deposit on the surface, and we should see a residue of plutonium. Okay, they went back, and they checked, and they found the residue, and they showed the residue was from the source, not from atmospheric fallout. And when the original people that analyzed the data saw the residue and simply assumed it was atmospheric fallout, which was partly due to stuff going on at the Savannah River site and all the other activity. So I don't have time to go into that, but question number two was answered in positively. So what that motivated then was to start studying transport in plants, how plutonium was transported in plants. And here's the logic behind our plant studies. Both bacteria and plant roots produce complex organic chemicals called siderophores. The purpose of siderophores is to capture iron, which is an essential nutrient, and also to increase its mobility so the plants can get it. So could plants or soil bacteria mistake plutonium for iron and form these complexes? And if the stuff was as mobile in the plant as our simulations implied, then we thought right away it had to be in a complex form, because regular ionic plutonium just isn't that mobile. So here's some chemical similarities between plutonium and iron. And this is an example of DFOB, a type of siderophore. When it absorbs plutonium, It takes it in the center there, or iron, and it turns out that these two materials, the plutonium-3 and the iron-3, have very similar chemical properties. And so there's a strong possibility here that the plants could have a specialized chemical system that accidentally takes up plutonium. All right, this is the experimental setup we used to study that possibility. We grew corn, which is in the grass family, soil containers, and then solution containers underneath them. And in this one over here, you can see that we had the taproot come out of the bottom of the soil container, go into the solution container, and so that is where we added our plutonium solutions. And then we could watch it go up into the plant. All right, here's some data. The vertical axis is essentially, think of a corn plant as growing vertically, and then disintegrations per minute per gram are on the horizontal axis. We when we wanted to check a plant, we would section it and measure the radioactivity. And so you can see two main results here. The shortest experiment was 2 hours. I hate to say that the first experiment we did was at least two weeks, because we thought that the stuff would never move this fast. We got down to 2 hours. You can see that within 2 hours, the plutonium is throughout the plant, and it's already accumulating in the upper plant part due to transpiration, leaving the dissolved materials behind. So then we designed an experiment to really get down and measure the actual travel time of the plutonium. And so we measured 58 centimeters up the corn plant, and then we would cut the top of the corn off and look for the arrival time of the plutonium in the top of the corn. So we're talking about the concentration versus exposure time for a 58 centimeter travel distance in the plant. The dashed line, we consider that doubtful arrival. That's sort of from controls. You can see at 10 minutes, maybe something started to arrive there, but at 20 minutes, we definitely had plutonium arriving 58 centimeters. So we can say then that the plutonium pore velocity was at least 174 centimeters per hour. And that is over a million times faster than the plutonium was moving in the soil. And actually, the million is conservative, because if you looked at the reduced plutonium, it would be like 10 million. So here was something that could really move the plutonium. So the conclusion, our oxidation reduction hypothesis still seems reasonable. We did show that the residue of plutonium was on the surface. We had to use the plants in order to capture the above source data. But you may have noticed right above the source, we're still haven't caught the data. So there's something else going on right above the source. And additional studies that I can't report because of time constraints further support that the plants are mistaking plutonium for iron. And that's why it's so mobile in a plant environment. And this is the little summary of the computer-aided thinking. The main difference between that and prediction is the computer-aided thinking works well when you're constrained by a lot of data. If you think about it, in this experiment, we had lots of data. We had climatic data. We had all the distribution data. We had data on the root density and many other things that I haven't touched upon. And so we used the simulations to orient ourselves within that data set. A true prediction is usually highly unconstrained. And I don't think our models work too well with in complex systems for straight-on predictions, unconstrained predictions. That's where we really have trouble. But within it, with a constrained data set, I think the models can really be very useful to help understand. And there's the soil hydraulic functions and the Van Genuchten relationships. And there actually were some measurements that we made. We didn't make them, somebody else made them. But I fudged the curve a little bit to make the Van Gennepen function fit the measurements, as you see there, but a very little bit. Okay, thank you. I'll get my electric personality away from that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's radioactive.
What kind of questions?
We could have time for one question, Danny.
That's possible, but a diffusion process has if it's carried by water, if it's a diffusion dispersion, it has a lot of trouble giving us the upward transport. Now, I personally suspect it's mobile bacteria that are moving that move some of that stuff up near the source. But again, there's more experiments that need to be done to clarify that. No, they operate. No, it's a bacteria and a plant. Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Fred. Our next speaker will be Thomas Nicholson from the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Agency.